Vamos a continuar con nuestras sesiones de conferencia de software libre. Y nuestro próximo convidado es una persona que ya estuvo aquí el año pasado y que te ha acompañado mucho, alias, no solo acompañado, mas te ha contribuido mucho como desenvolvimiento de software libre en Portugal, las asociaciones que se están a crear como ANSO. Y este año, el Loic Dachary, que es miembro de la Free Software Foundation Europe, de la sección francesa, y es miembro también de la asociación francesa April. Y este año va a hablarnos sobre los juegos, porque él está envolvido, él trabaja en una empresa que intenta hacer negocio con software libre únicamente, producen juegos que son completamente libres, y va a nos hablar sobre los juegos de software libre, free gaming. Loic.
Yes. I will betray you. Is it okay for everyone if I speak English slowly? You understand me? Yes. When I arrived in Portugal, I have been told that there is a law proposal for free software in public administrations. And this is so great that I decided to change my talk. So we could talk about free software and games. I see you're not too many here, so we can chat outside about games as long as you want. But what is happening currently in Portugal is unique in Europe. So it deserves a lot of attention, a lot of publicity, and I would like to talk about that. First, I will explain the vision I have about free software, what free software is about. I'm pretty sure you do not hear about free software in this way very often. If you were at the speech of the IBM spokesperson just before, you will see that there is a great difference. He spoke about GNU Linux. I will speak about free software. And then I did choose to take the text of the law proposal that you have, which is in Portuguese, translated it in English so that I can understand it. And I would like with all of you to go over it and try to understand where it stands, why it's written this way, and how it compares to other things that were done in France, for instance, or other countries. Is it okay?
Sure.
Okay. Okay. Oh, blast. I'm gone. So this is free software. It does not work all the time. Wait. It will come back. Yes, I have it.
You have both.
No, I cannot have both. If I have both, it's all mixed up. So I am Loic Dachary. What I do usually is I spend some time developing free software games. That was what I was supposed to talk about. And specifically, I'm improving a library that allows you to do games such as this one. And here you can see a GNU. The back of a GNU, which is the same GNU you saw in the first slide. And so it is in a 3D space, and that's pretty fun to do because you see what you do. Doing games is making programs that you can see living. I'm also a member of the GNU community and the Debian project, and as I do now, sometimes I speak for the free software movement. I do not try to convince people because, well, you're all grown-ups, so I guess you can decide for yourself. But I speak about what I believe. And this talk will be about free software being about ethics and freedom, and also how it relates to the laws that we have the laws that we must obey. So basically, free software, that's strange, I guess. There is something missing. Okay. Free software is that all software should be associated to four freedoms. If you fail to remember what freedoms can define free software, you can easily remember them by thinking about what you do with software. So when you get a software, the first thing you want to do is to use it. You must have the freedom to use it. As a matter of fact, when you look at the law, you will not see that someone can forbid you to use the software. That's pretty strange. You always think that I cannot use the software if that and that, but, well, it's not restricted. And that's what is said, for instance, in the GNU GPL license. Using the software is not restricted. So you have this freedom to use. You have it no matter what. And then when you use the software, since we're all human beings, we want to understand how it works. We cannot refrain from understanding how things work. But as a strange consequences of laws, someone can forbid you the right to learn about software. So you must have this freedom. It's not granted to everyone. Using the software is granted to everyone. But studying the software is sometimes it's restricted. You cannot do it. So you must be sure you have this freedom in addition, to be curious, to study the software. Once you've understood how the software works, you usually want to modify it because you have a friend. Let's say my grandmother has a very bad eye condition and she needs to have buttons that big to click on them. Let's say, and maybe there are three people in the world with the same problem. Who is going to do this modification for me? No one. So I'm a developer, so I can do it for my grandmother. I do it. I have the freedom to do it. I need the freedom to do it. So this is the freedom to improve the program and release your improvements. And then, once you've done that, obviously you don't want, you're generous. Basically, you share with people. You come here, it's not because you're selfish, but because you're curious, and then you will talk about the speeches, things you saw with people. Same with software. You modified it, then you want to give it to someone. I want to give it to my grandmother. And I want to do that legitimately. So I need this four freedoms to use the software, study how it works, then I modify it, and then I redistribute it to whoever I want. Obviously, to do all that, it's much easier if you have access to the source code, which is basically the form in which the program is designed. So let's say now that you are able to write a program, that you are able to contribute to a program, because software is really easy to do, and you need not be a programmer to do software. Say, well, if I can't write code, what should I do? You can translate messages, for instance. Just the fact that you speak English and Portuguese, you can translate English messages into Portuguese messages so that your grandmother, again, with the big buttons, will be able to read what's on it because she never learned English. So you can be an author by doing that. You can be a software author by doing that. And there are a lot of skills that allow you to enrich a software. So everyone potentially is a software author. I don't know how many people here actually have developer skills. You're a developer, but everyone? Okay, you don't. Well, you can contribute to free software anyway, to software in general. But now, when you do that, you create something. So from your mind, you write things, mostly, let's say, a piece of code. Then you are the author of this piece of code. You are what is called, in legal terms, the copyright holder. And this happens magically. You need not do anything about that. As soon as you put your hands on the keyboard and finish typing, then whoops, you are the copyright holder. There is no need for you to take the program, go to the library, let's say, and say, oh, I wrote that, please register my name and see that I actually wrote that. You don't need to do anything. It's magic. And what it gives you, you wrote the software because you have a mind, you type, and then you are the copyright holder. And it gives you a power over what you've done. And specifically, this power is the power to deny everyone in the world the four freedoms we talked about. This is the power you have. This is the power every software author has. He can deny freedom to everyone on the piece of code he wrote. And I don't know if you saw Spider-Man, the film. Maybe yes. Yeah, there is a phrase that is not really original, but the uncle of Spider-Man says, with great power comes great responsibilities. And then he realizes that being Spider-Man is not living an easy life. Well, being a software author is not living an easy life either. You have an immense power. And then you have a great responsibility. You can choose to deny everyone on this planet the right, the four freedoms that we described. Or you have the power to give them all the four freedoms. Can you imagine the difference it makes? Let's say you wrote something actually original. You really have the power to share it with the whole planet. Or to say, no, I'm selfish, I keep it to myself. Or maybe I will give a copy or two to people if they give me money. This is pitiful. Oh, this is what I think. So, this power, you can exercise it, and there are not many ways you can exercise it. For instance, if you're very generous, you cannot just say, well, I'm generous. This is in the public domain. It's something that is surprisingly hard to do. You cannot say, I'm not the author of that anymore. It belongs to everyone, and I don't want to hear about it. It's hard to do. And, well, the same thing as saying it's not copyrighted. We saw that it happens magically, so you cannot do anything about it. It happened. Your will has nothing to do about it. So you must actually license it. That is, you must write a small document that says, I give these freedoms to people, if you choose to. If you choose to exercise your power in this way, you have to write a document. And this document being legally binding for you and the rest of the world, it needs to be written pretty carefully because it has great consequences. There is a false idea that when you don't do that, on a piece of software, then it's free software. No, it's proprietary. By default, you don't have the right to do anything. So if you see, so when you're an author, you don't want to do that. You don't want to release a file without any mention because it will be proprietary. But when you are a user of software, when a software comes into your hands, then you should carefully consider if it's written explicitly that you have these freedoms. If there is nothing written, it means you don't have these freedoms. And if people tell you, well, don't worry about these details, we will see later, they are liars. And they will get you into a lot of troubles. Actually, maybe you heard about the Sigma Designs XVID versus XVID problem. No? No, you didn't. Well, typically, large company, they have offices in Japan, in the U.S., etc. They took a piece of software and they just removed every copyright information in it and said, we did it. That's forbidden. You cannot do that. So these matters are not to be taken lightly. You have to watch it. It does not take a long time, but you need to watch that. So, if you choose to release free software, that's nice. You're a responsible software author. And let's say it's marvelous. I did not realize that it was so important to share software with people. And yes, I will do it. Unfortunately, some people will not let you do that. And some people will try to actually prevent you from being generous to people. First, they will tell you that software should be proprietary. Otherwise, there will be no one to pay for making software. So they will try to convince people. Sometime in conferences like that, you see people actually telling you exactly that kind of thing. But they do not stop here. What they want to do is change laws so that it's not possible to do free software anymore. So that you cannot legally be generous to the humanity. So it started to happen last year when proprietary software vendors realized that free software will be a competitor forever. That free software is not a company you can buy. Obviously, yes, everybody is able to make it. It's a concept. People think it's good, they do free software. But it's not the free software company that you can buy. And they decided to fight against this competitor in two ways. First, they decided to fight against the GNU-GPL license. That is the piece of paper that an author will use to say, I share my software with everyone. Actually, this license is used by more than 60% of the free software out there. And they were extremely embarrassed because this license has a specific will, that is, you cannot remove the freedom that you gave. I'm wondering if I should expand on this or not. At this. No, yeah. Okay. So the GNU-GPL does not allow anyone to take the freedom that you gave. When I think I made my point about the software author being having a great power. So he chooses to share with everyone. Now, This is the responsibility he takes. What happens if someone out there takes the software you wrote and denies the freedom to other people? I mean, you, author, when you give freedoms, if you don't guarantee that no one can remove them, someone else can deny freedom on the software you wrote. That may happen. I mean, I write a software, I give it to A. A says, well, I will give it to B, but I will remove all the freedoms. If you write carelessly the document, then that's what happens. The GNU GPL does not allow that. It says, you have all the freedoms, but you cannot deny it to other people. So, proprietary software vendors were pissed about this license because they could not take free software, make it proprietary, keep it for themselves, and do not share with other people. It's not allowed by the license. So they want to say to people that they should not use the GNU GPL. Well, it's bad. They should use a license that allows them to say, what's yours is mine, and what's mine is mine too. So everything goes to them. The second thing they tried to do is to convince people that you should use free software together with proprietary software. That free software is quite nice and it complements proprietary software solutions. Since when someone talks negatively about something, it's usually not well received, they do not say free software is bad. They say free software is good if we can say what's yours is mine and what mine is mine. So they say, for instance, if you want to write a CD with software in it, place free software in it and proprietary software. That's perfectly okay. That's a good thing to do. And they forget to tell you that if you do that, let's say you have 600 megabytes on this CD and you have 799 megabytes of free software, and you just have 1 megabyte of proprietary software. What happens to the whole CD? What can you do? What are you allowed to do with the whole CD? Can you copy it 1,000 times? Can you distribute it to all the schools in the country? You cannot do that because it is subject to the restriction of this very small part. Doesn't matter if it's big or not. It's the most restrictive license that wins. So if on a machine or a CD you mix proprietary software with free software, what happens, in effect, is that you have a proprietary set, a proprietary machine, proprietary CD. And that seems pretty natural when you think about freedom. You cannot be half free. You cannot be 99% free. You're free or you're not. And that's probably the only subject on which proprietary software vendors and the Free Software Foundation agree. This is harmful to free software. So practically speaking, this is more technical. When you're a free software author, how do you make sure your software is free? You have a few steps. First, you choose the license. I told you that more than 60% of the software use the GNU GPL. So you could choose another. I recommend the GNU GPL, but you have to choose one and actually apply it to your software. You must make sure that you have all the information applied. None of them is mandatory. Then you're not required to put this information. As I said before, you're the copyright holder magically. But if you want to defend it efficiently, then you should add this information. When you distribute the software, you put the license in it so that people who receive the software know exactly what they can do and what they can't. And then on each file, you write copyright, C, myself, the year, etc. You also, you add that in every file. And you also, just in case, you add the copyright and the license notice in the README file that comes with your software. So that if you're missing a file with no copyright notice, a lawyer will take that README file as an indication that the file, without any mention, is indeed distributed under this license, the GNU GPL, for instance. It will serve as an indication for the uncopyrighted file. And you must do the effort of making sure that the software does not depend on non-free software. Sometimes it's pretty tough. I don't know, do people actually use Java? Yes? Do you write Java programs? You do. Well, we have a few of them. It's really problematic to make sure that your Java program will run without proprietary software. I don't know if you tried. Did you try to make sure that your program is running on a 100% free software machine? If I take your Java program, I put it on my machine here, I make sure that there is no proprietary software whatsoever, will it run? You don't know. You're not sure. Well, something I can assure you is that if you're not sure, then it won't run. Well, I exaggerate a bit, but it's extremely likely. In the case of Java, it's almost 100% sure that it will not run. So, under the principle that if you have only a tiny piece of proprietary software, then your whole solution is proprietary, it means that if you wrote a program, and let's say it's a program that would be great for schools to teach things to pupils, to all schools in your country. You wrote that software, it is great. And you want to give it to all the schools, and you're successful at it. Let's say the government says this software should be used everywhere, and it's free software. Marvelous. Now, if it depends on proprietary software, then the government, instead of being completely free to do it, will have to ask the proprietary software vendor for permission to do that. It has nothing to do about what you've wrote. What you've wrote is completely free, but it depends on something that is not free. So the government could not deploy it in the schools. That's unfortunate. So we need, as software authors, to be careful. It doesn't matter if your software is slower, if it's a bit clumsy because the free software alternative is not as great technically as the proprietary software alternative. For instance, for games, accelerated 3D is not so good with free software drivers. But yet, well, it works, and you're free. Well, I very much prefer to be free and poor with not so nice clothes instead of being rich and in a prison. So this is the last slide about free software in general. What time is it?
6:33.
So I spent
half an hour. You've been talking for half an hour.
Half an hour, okay.
So you have one more half an hour.
Probably you didn't hear talks speaking of that, like if it was boring. People tend to like to talk about the performances, how GNU Linux is so great, how it's stable, etc., etc. I'm not being too popular because I tend to say that free software is not something that is efficient or reliable or good quality. Why should it be? I do not see the connection between a software being free and a software being of good quality. I mean, someone able to write crappy software, there are plenty out there, can make this program free software. Therefore, there can be crappy free software that is not reliable, not stable, or bad quality. And so what's the relation between the two? And I think that people who claim that free software is of quality, that it will never fail you, they confuse. They are not talking about free software in general. They are not talking about the fact that software should be free, about the freedoms. They are talking about a few specific products that are indeed of high quality, such as the Linux kernel, marvelous piece of code, extremely robust, extremely stable, great work. It's less than 0.5% of the free software out there. Yet, it's really good. Or Apache, very good web server. But I could mention 5,000 free software that are pure crap. So I see it. We should be really careful, because let's say you go to someone and say, that's the first time you hear about free software. I will explain to you what it is. So you go to him and say, free software is of extremely good quality and it will never fail you. You see, your computer reboots every so often. With free software, it will not reboot anymore. It will be stable for days and it will run twice faster. Obviously, when you do that, you think about the Linux kernel. You think about Apache. But when you speak, you say free software. And how the person you speak to, how could she know that you don't speak about free software in general? How could she know that you speak about a few specific products of high quality? It's like if I was on the opposite side and say, okay, proprietary software is great, it's high quality, it will never fail you, etc. Exactly the same thing. It's certainly true in some circumstances. I mean, you think proprietary software equals Windows, equals crash, blue screen. But I'm positive that there are proprietary operating systems out there that do not crash too often. Well, there must be some. And some web servers that are not complete crap. And some proprietary software that do not exist in free software at all and that are great. So it does not seem fair. You would not forgive someone saying proprietary software is blah, 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 because he's speaking about a few examples and saying free, proprietary software in general. Same way, you should be, when we talk about free software, we should be careful not to to mix the two. And the consequence is, if you do this mistake, confusing a few products with a freedom movement, then what happened in South Africa could happen again anywhere. What happened in South Africa is, during about 2 years, free software advocates went to the government and explained them how free software was so great because it was free, gratis. They did not say free freedom. They said free gratis. So they sold, literally, the fact that free software was gratis. After 2 years, they succeeded. Within 3 months, the largest proprietary software vendor out there went to the government and said, okay, you will have proprietary licenses for free. The government said, well, that's what we wanted, so thank you, and goodbye, free software. So you've lost everything. If you try to promote free software, ideals of freedom, independence, sharing, etc., by selling something that is not specific to that, in the long run, you lose. You can spend months selling something and then slash back. This happens to government. This also happens to companies. I will not expand on this example. It's a French company, but, well, it happened about the same thing. It was not sold because it was free, but because it was better, technically speaking. Lectra is a French company, world leader in machines used to cut tissue. Clothes, fabrics. And, well, I speak about this one because I'm guilty of it. I sold them GNU because at the time it was the end of the 80s. There was no Linux kernel yet. So I sold them GNU because it was technically superior. And then they used the Linux kernel together with GNU, GNU Linux, etc., doing 10 years they used it. Only a few years ago, maybe 3 years ago, they apparently found a proprietary solution that was technically more advanced, and they switched to it. Why shouldn't they? I never sold them freedom. I sold them technical excellence. So when technical excellence changed side, they went to the other side. They never even realized that there was a side, that there was a freedom issue. So at the end, free software is essentially a matter of ethic. I mean, you people are... You won't, let's say you work for a company. You won't go to your competitor, pull a gun, and shoot him a bullet in the head because he's on your way. You will not do that. Technically speaking, you could. And what prevents you to buy a gun, borrow a gun to someone, walk to the office, knock on the door, and shoot a bullet in the head of the guy? Oh, you get rid of your competitor, all right. But you will not do that because it's morally wrong. You decided that you will never do that. And note that the fact that the law forbids you to do that does not even come into play. You don't do that mainly because law will punish you. You do it mainly because you think it's wrong. Or you don't do it because you think it's wrong. So, yes, we have an ethic. And in fact, companies also have an ethic. We rarely think about ethic when it comes to companies, but they do have an ethic. For instance, in Portugal, you will not find a company hiring children. Yeah, it's forbidden by law, again, but I think you will not find a CEO, manager, company manager, willing to do that, and saying, well, this law is bad. You will not see an article anywhere in Portuguese press advocating for child work. So companies do have an ethic. And free software can be part of this ethic. We could say free software should be free to everyone, should be shared among people. This is right. And proprietary software, not sharing, denying to everyone, is wrong. I will never be responsible of someone who bought a proprietary license from me, had a grandmother with a high condition, and because I forbid him to modify the software, he could not help his grandmother. This is wrong. This is social damage. I don't want to be responsible of that. So it's part of my ethic. And in addition, it will not disappoint you. I mean, if you think free software will make your life easier, you're mistaken. My life is quite more complex because I use free software. I think it would be significantly easier if I used proprietary software. So it's not a matter of personal convenience. Yes, we lose time. We lose performance. My computer crashes about once a day for a reason or another. Well, I'm making some strange things with it, but that's no excuse. Well, it's not stable. It's not stable. But if you rely on free software to preserve your freedom, then it will never fail you. Because, well, that's what it's made for. You will find more information on http://gnu.org philosophy on this subject. There are a lot of texts in English, probably in Portuguese too. I don't know if they were all translated. Not all of them.
A lot of them are translated.
Okay. So I advise you to read them because they are not technical and they are crystal clear. It's really hard to write something that is crystal clear. That's why I talk and I do not write. When I talk, that's okay. I can be a bit fuzzy. Nobody worries about it. And here we go into the second part of the talk, which is less prepared. So I expect that you interact from now on because you are aware of Portuguese laws, what could be done. This is a law that will affect you if it is voted, not me. So you have questions. What I can say about it, and certainly James can comment on it too. So let's the second part be more interactive as you want. So what's happening exactly, in my understanding, is about a year ago or a few months ago, something happened in Peru that is happening now in Portugal. A law was proposed whose goal is to say public administration, the government, will only buy free software. You got that. Like, you must see the government like if it was you. You obviously, you can decide that you buy only free software. That's what I decided. I don't need any law for that. But since it's the government, the will of the government is translated into a law. So this law says the government will only buy free software. This is something that is quite mind-boggling. Yes, governments have a will of their own, and they speak it by laws. Now, Before we start, I'd like to know if someone thinks it is wrong for one reason or the other. I'll give you a few seconds to think about it. I'm not asking if this is something absolutely bad, should not be done. But when you think about it, government, there is a law, only buying free software, don't you have an objection? Don't you see? Okay. So first thing that comes into mind is practical problems to actually do it. Okay. So I repeat so that it's recorded. You think that government should buy software that best serve public interest. And do I translate well when I say if there is no free software to fill a specific need, then the government, according to you, should buy proprietary software?
Of course.
Okay. Yes. So that would be a solution. That's a good point. Yes, why not? Why not? Okay, so you're saying that if there is no free software to fill a specific need, the government should pay a company to develop the software. And free software, being free software. But in the meantime, in the meantime, what should they do? I guess you do not object with the idea that the government could pay someone to develop a software, after all.
Paying developers to develop new software for some applications would be in the long run more expensive than going for some proprietary software that is already developed.
There's the problem. I rephrase so we're sure we're on the same line. So what you're saying, developing free software when there is none, there is a problem. It's likely to cost more money. And, well, I must say that I agree with that. Specific software tends to be more expensive than software that is made for more people. So the first time you write a software, it's expensive, yes.
But we have universities, and we can do it as a university project, for instance. And it has no costs.
Well, it always has a cost.
Yes.
Yes, because who pays the university? The government. Who sustain the students? The parents? Maybe the government? So, and who pays the university? Ah, the same people, the parents. So,
when people finish their degrees, they have to do projects, and many of those projects are done going to work to companies that take advantage of that work and keep the software for themselves.
Yes, but it's not prohibited by law. So you're saying that if someone develops a software in the university, it should be free.
Yes.
I tend to agree. You cannot impose people to do something specific with their mind, but if they are paid by someone, you can pay them under the condition that, and in the case of universities, it makes sense. So maybe more people who didn't talk, if you have a silly question, something that, or just a remark.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment.
Okay, yeah.
Just regarding costs, we are accustomed to considering costs from the point of view of a businessman, but we have to take into account social costs. So it could be expensive, some solution from the point of view of money, but it's the same as if I'm going to heat my room, and it's very easy and cost effective to just burn wood or do something, but it could be harmful for the environment, or I could be getting fumes that are very dangerous. So it could be very expensive to develop some new method of heating the room without those harmful. It's expensive from the point of view of money, but it's less expensive from the point of view of damage to your own body or to the environment or whatever.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. That goes back to what you said. In fact, yes, it may be expensive, but expenses is not the only unit measure of the government, thanks God. If it was not the case, we would be in trouble. If the government was driven by cost considerations, it would be bad. Yet, it's a parameter. But as James said, it's a secondary parameter. And in your first remark, when you said that, I try to remember your exact words, first remark, the government should buy what is best for the people. Is it in the public interest? Right, exactly, that's what you say. Now, as James said, public interest is rarely measured by a matter of cost. And in this specific case, public interest is first and foremost, government must be independent. This is the first condition. Obviously, yes, we elect a government. Why? We elect this government so that he can rule the country. If this government is not independent, he's just failing the mission we gave him. No doubt about that. And whatever it costs, this independence must be preserved. The day the government loses independence, it basically loses the reason it exists. Another reason that goes in the public interest, another factor that is as much important, is transparency. Is the government is not a secret society that you elect to dominate you. It's a bunch of people, and they can fail the same way you do. We fail. I failed many times in my life. If you're interested, I could entertain you with some funny failures. And these elected people will fail too. So we impose them to be independent, but we also impose them to be transparent. What they do needs to be transparent. We need, by law, to see what they do, to know what they do. And this highly depends on the tools they use. How could they be transparent if the software they use is proprietary? Because even them don't know what's inside. So transparency cannot be achieved. So in the public interest, I see essentially two things: independence, transparency. What's pretty funny is 3 years ago, a law was proposed in France by a congressman called Lafitte. The law was about that big, a few sentences. But without preamble, I mean, here you have sentences, but I did not. You have to go to the URL on Ansel to read the preamble. That is the rationale why this law exists, why this law should pass. And in France, the preamble didn't say anything about independence and transparency and social value and economical value, political need, etc. As a consequence, of course, it was dismissed. It was not the only reason, but we could hardly defend it. We couldn't go to the press and say, we won this law because, well, it was ill-fitted. By comparison, the law you have here is extremely well done. I don't say it does not have any flaw, but it's definitely the best law proposal we have in Europe currently, and you have it. So you should cherish it. And we will try to, if you want, for my understanding and yours, we will try to go to the 5 articles and see why, what obligation they give and how they concern you. So the first, the translation is maybe not so good, so you fix me, James, you correct me if I'm wrong. All the services of the state are obliged to use free software in its system and computer equipment. They are obliged. They have not the option. It's not they are encouraged, they are obliged. Now we've talked about 45 minutes about free software. And obligation in this case may seem not that shocking to you, because the ethical matter, transparency, and so on, say, well, the government is obliged. The government is obliged, but who votes the laws, etc.? Well, it's in fact, the government speaks for himself and say, I oblige myself to do that. The citizens say the government should do that. So yes, I oblige myself. In the same way as me, Loïc Dachary, I oblige myself to not depend on proprietary software. This is the point. This is the issue. It has nothing to do with the competition, with the industry out there. It's only about me, government. Therefore, obliged, yes, is understandable. But if you say that to someone, all of a sudden, come in the street, say the government is obliged to buy free software, he will jump in his boots. Say, what? The government does what he wants. And then you have to explain why it makes sense. And I hope that all of you will feel comfortable to explain that, because you will need to explain it to many, many times. Such a law proposal will probably take years to be adopted. And even if it's not adopted, it will be something that you will be discussing again and again, that you want to be able to defend, to maybe to modify, maybe to improve. You want to talk about it. the scope of application. So the present law applies to the local and central enclosed administration public executive. This is probably complete crap, but it means all public administration. Is it right? All public administration. Legislative, judicial, and public companies. I don't know what public companies are. Probably, I don't know, companies owned half by private, that's it. Where, the, oh, okay, half, 50%. Okay, so considered to be kind of part of the government. So it's a very broad scope. I don't know if there is something missing. Is there? So the idea is to cover all the government. There is no will to exclude a specific field of the government. Even the defense is included.
You just have a typo there. Instead of administration public, it's public administration,
okay.
Executive, legislative, and judicial.
Okay.
But it's okay.
So it's even the defense department. So justice, defense, well, okay, so no one is left out. It's really concerning everyone. Is someone here working for public administration?
Yes.
Oh, you are?
I'm a public employee, yes.
Okay.
Well, as last year we had a speaker from the public administration, and as he told us, the public administration is the largest enterprise in Portugal. In Portugal, compared to some other countries, a high percentage of the population are public employees.
Oh.
So this will include a lot of people in Portugal.
Oh, so, okay. So this is who it concerns. Not you, apparently, but maybe some of your relatives will see free software on their desktop if this happens. So, in the law, is free software is defined. This is tremendously important. This has this is a great thing to do. When you pass a law, there is nothing more important than to define the concept you talk about. This is an immense drawback of the French law that we have, the French proposal law that we have. It talks about free software and never defines it. So it leaves room for everyone to say free software is this and this. It's freeware. It's something else. So there it's defined. So free software is considered as one whose license of use guarantees its user, without incidental costs, the ability to execute the program for any end, freedom of use, to redistribute copies, to study the program functions, and to adapt it to the necessities of the user. There you have study and modification in one phrase, and to improve the program, modification again, and to publish, which is redistribute. So you have a high level of redundancy in this phrase, which leaves about no doubt about what you say. Laws are studied by lawyers during years. And no matter who write it, it's anonymous. I mean, if I actually wrote this law, then lawyers will say, the writer of the law wanted to say that and that. No matter what you can say, you can step out and say, no, I didn't mean that. You're negligible. It's not, the law was not written by you. It was written by the state. So you can say whatever you want, doesn't count. So redundancy here and making crystal clear what you mean is tremendously important. Access to the code source being a requirement for these abilities is also needed, although it tends to disappear, but there are still people who are claiming that binary form and source form may not be protected in the same way. In fact, it's the same program, just automatically transformed. But some people do think it's not handled in the same way by the law. So there, you need to access the form in which you can do modifications. So there you have the four freedoms. You have them for good. It means also that if this passes, every law referring to free software, every text referring to free software, will take that as a reference. So you better got it right, because 5 years after it was voted, if you miss one freedom, you're screwed. It's too late. So they are all there. It's not like they've just been invented, these four freedoms. We've been using them in the past 15 years. And we've made sure that it's indeed the freedoms we need to do whatever we want. About incidental costs, this one also is a major point. Because let's say you have a patent. We didn't speak about patents, but to make it short, when you write a software, you're the copyright holder, you have the copyright. Then when you have an idea, in some countries, you can have a patent about this idea. This is completely ridiculous, but, well, some countries it happens. It may happen in Europe too. The effect on software is that when you write a software, you have a lot of ideas. So someone who has a patent on an idea could come to your software and say, you owe me this and this and this and this. Or someone writing a software could say, this is free software giving all these freedoms, but I will put a patent on the side. So it matches all the freedoms we have here, but I will put a patent, and in order to use this idea, you have to pay me 5 million euros. So this could be an incidental cost, and there could be many. That is, once you have all these freedoms, you can expect that everyone will try to fuck them hard. This prevents you from this. Then, this is the part I do not like too much, but the law being so nice on the side, we have to take it. It's exceptions. So, any governmental body in the Article 2, so all the governments, can request to the presidency of the cabinet, I don't know if it's the right mention, an exception authorization that he has to justify so that he can use software that does not match the four freedoms we saw before. But only if one of the three exceptions is met. There is A, B, C, one per slide. So the idea is that only under the condition that there is an emergency to use a software and there is no free software alternative at the moment, then as a special exception that is granted to the public administration, they could use proprietary software. So this addresses an issue that we didn't talk about, which is you suggested that they should develop software, but it takes time. And it may be critical for them to have the software right now. If it's available, they are allowed to have an excuse not to be transparent, not to be independent for a short period of time. So there are many reasons why I think and James also think that these articles are not exactly what they should be. It would be better if they were left out or written in another way. But we have to understand the limitation that it gives. So they are organized in three priority. That is, you have an excuse, level A, level B, level C. You cannot take the excuse level C if you match the case described in level A. It will become clear. So you can ask for an excuse to use proprietary software if the software that it fulfills to all the criteria, so all the criteria are matched, except the ability to distribute the modified program. So if the program, proprietary program that you want to get only has this exception, then you have an authorization for 3 years that is granted to you. If the only freedom that is missing is the freedom of distributing the modified program, that is, you can modify it, you can use it, you can study it, but you cannot distribute the modified program. You can distribute the verbatim program, the program not changed, but you cannot distribute the modified program. If that's the only freedom that is missing, then you can ask for a 3-year exception. You stop me if I'm going nuts.
Your Portuguese had become very good to be able to translate this in just a couple of hours that you have.
In case, so if you're not in this case, so if you cannot manage to find a software that is proprietary just because it misses this freedom, so the only proprietary software out there that matches your need misses more than this freedom. Let's say it forbids you to modify it too. In case the previous solution is not possible, the government will be able to choose a software for which there is no free software equivalent of the same kind at an advanced stage of development. In this case, the authorization is transitory, except is a transitory exception and expires automatically when free software becomes available with the necessary functionality. It means if there is a proprietary software now, blah, 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 and there is a free software out there, but it's crap. So the case you mentioned, say, we will pay someone to develop the software, but it's not yet there, and we need it. And then we get an exception permission for the interim until the free software solution becomes functionally viable. And the exception does not last 3 years. It expires as soon as the free software alternative exists. And if there is not something like that, you've examined all this. Sorry. Then you have the ultimate exception, that is, you can use a pure proprietary software with all the restrictions, and there is no development whatsoever that matches it, and you have this exception for 2 years. And after 2 years, there is a need to, after examination that the situation did not change, that is, at the end of the 2 years, you cannot just say, this goes on again and again. It's not perpetual. It can be done for another 2 years only after examination that the situation did not change. So there are a lot of provisions here to cope with the transitory aspect of things. You need to go from the current situation to the next. One of the reasons why the French law was dismissed is explicitly, I read it again about 2 weeks ago. The French industry minister at the time said that it could not be done in the time required. So it was no use to vote it. Said within 3 years, administration should use, must use free software. Say, well, there is no way this will happen. This will take years. So maybe this is something that is not too good, but maybe the something that addresses this issue, maybe something that will allow this law to pass. And hopefully, people will not dive in this exception to stay there forever. With exceptions, that's the risk you have. And it can be as little as two words. In European law, there are two words that are causing us immense troubles as such. And literally, many years were invested, were spent, spoiled by these two words, as such. So I pray that there is no such hole in the way it's written. I was not able to examine it, to see it carefully enough to figure that out. And we are almost done. So this does not require commentary. On every law in France and in Portugal, it's the same. First, you state the basics, and then you say who will do what and under which condition. So it says who will give the authorizations, how to publish the exceptions, and it must be available to the public. Again, transparency, you cannot hide what you do, except for the defense, where supposedly they don't want to advertise everything they do because it's military, they're paranoid. I hate them. And this is about how it will happen. So there will need to be money spent. So the state will invest money, because it's not just a matter of saying we change, we only buy software, free software. Everything needs to change that touches software, the services linked to software, people installing software in the administration. They have to install some other kind of product, unless all the products sold to the state become free software, in which case it will be simpler. But in any case, the state will take the will spend the necessary money, will teach people how to do it, and will also be responsible for technical adaptations. I mean, if there is technical something to do because of free software, the state does it. It's not to someone else to do it. Already in the government body, then public services, having the transition process to be finished. This is coming to dates. In all the cases where it does not have an exception authorizations, 3 years after the present law is activated. So again here, as in France, it's 3 years. But because of the exceptions, in really delicate case, it could be extended. But not widely extended. Extended under our conditions. I really, if there is only one thing you do about this law, is when you go back home, you take the law, you see it's short. We read it in a few minutes. And you look at it extremely carefully. If you know a lawyer, have the lawyer look at it. And if you have a lawyer who despises free software, have the lawyer look at it and see how he can fuck it, because it's not voted yet. So it can be improved. So look at it. Look at it. Criticize it. Try to fix it. 19 days of publication, the present law for a new acquisition. So it's, there is no conceptual. It's, that's just the way it, it goes. There are two more articles which are really short. I did not include them. And yeah, my last slide is not good. Okay? So understanding the law is good, is a good way. Yeah, it's not well written, I think. It's good, is understanding. Okay. Understanding this law, by understanding this law, by examining this law, you will get to the core, to the heart of the free software movement. That's all it's about. It was created in the mid-80s precisely for these reasons. It was created for ethical motives. It was created because it's morally the only solution for software. Then, well, supporting this law proposal is extremely important. I was clear about it. And proprietary software founders are already fighting back as we speak. So if you like free software, you better get to your computer now because they will not wait before shooting. If you want, we could make a bet. A bet that there will be a very generous offer from Microsoft to the Portuguese government in 3 weeks' time. Okay? We have a bet. Okay. And this is the URL where you can find it. I thank you all, and if you have questions...
Yes. Any questions?
Yeah.
Just a second. They're bringing the microphone.
What time is it? I'm not too late.
Yes, but it's been very interesting. So I think
sorry.
If people are still here, it's because they still want to.
It's about to the beginning.
Yes.
Sorry. Sorry. You said that just publish the source code isn't public domain.
Yeah.
But for instance, if I'm doing a research project and I find any source code on an unidentified website and I use it on my project, how far I am violating the rules?
Assuming that you found a piece of code somewhere, there is no copyright anywhere on this piece of code.
Exactly.
Well, you can't. It's illegal. I don't know specifically in Portugal, but in France, it is specifically stated that unless you have a specific permission from the copyright holder, you cannot do anything. So if you do that, you don't have the permission, so you can do it. Now, it turns out that when someone does this, putting somewhere visible, a piece of code, the intention is that he wants to give it to everyone. So you can just try to reach the guy and say, do you give me a license, a free software license for that? And usually he says, yes, I just forgot to put the file under a free software license. Yeah. Okay.
Any more questions? Okay. I just like to make a comment in the last remark that Luis said. He said that the proprietary vendors are scared. He was referring explicitly to a news that appeared in Microsoft's site yesterday where they mentioned this law project and they see it as a threat. And they already have links to the Portuguese sites and to the free software. So Microsoft had discovered this. They're already scared, they say. But so they must be thinking of some way of having that law not even getting to be considered in the parliament.
Okay. Vamos a agradecer más una vez, igual que el año pasado, a Luis por estar vindo y esperamos que continúe a vivir muchos más años a Puerto Ciudad Tecnológica y que nos continúe a sorprender con estas mudanzas de último momento del tema. Espero que nadie tenga ficado desiludido por no ter falado de Jogon, mas él estará aquí a mañana y no domingo para hablar con quien quiser acerca de los juegos. Okay. Entonces vamos a agradecer a Luis.